The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
Let's walk the talk
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
The Money Show brought to you by Absa Trade Management Online. Now's the time to speak to them for all your import and export finance needs. That's Africanacity. That's Absa. Absa is a registered FSP. Welcome to the Friday evening edition of The Money Show. As always, between 7 and 8, we'll bring you a digest of the best bits of The Money Show from the week that has been. And as always, some fabulous insights, some fabulous guests, and some really worthwhile conversations which have happened on The Money Show this week that you may have missed out on. And we look forward to bringing you extracts of those to encourage you, if you don't do so already, to catch up on the bits that you do miss via our podcast, which you can get on the Cape Talk or 702 website, or you can get it via your favorite podcast app. Money Show is well listened to, and we're very grateful to all of you who do that. But mostly, we like to have those of you who join us live, because that gives you an opportunity to play the Brutal Biz Quiz, which we will do at about 10 to 7 this evening. Lots of great questions. Producers have really pulled the stops out on this one tonight. And so looking forward to sharing the Brutal Biz Quiz with you. We'll speak to somebody who makes perfume only from natural sources. So apparently there's a whole synthetic trade in perfume that goes on. That's why some of it smells the way it does. I will look at that tonight on The Money Show. Looking forward to bringing you that. Plus, of course, we're going to be bringing you all the big money stories on the day. This is The Money Show. I'm Bruce Whitfield. The Money Show is brought to you by Absa Trade Management Online. Now's the time to speak to them for all your import and export finance needs. That's Africanacity. That's Absa. Absa is a registered FSP.
You're with Bruce Whitfield
on 702.
Let's walk the talk.
There's a very high risk that you could be offered something that has not been paid for, dodgy secondhand goods in the next couple of weeks. Of course, as those who have managed to avoid having the goods they stole in the looting of the last 10 days or so, look for ways to get rid of it, to try and generate some cash. We'll talk about how you identify stuff that is stolen and what to do if you're confronted with that moment of choice. Also, there's a huge amount of circumspection about the future of the JSE. It's had a spectacular week, by the way. 4 out of 5 trading days, strongly in positive territory. After Monday's global rout, we've seen markets rebound quite nicely. But on the JSE, the future of the market is a little bit uncertain, based on the fact that what we're seeing is considerably more delistings than listings, as some of South Africa's more attractive companies face buyouts, either from international firms or private equity groups that are awash with cash. And we're not seeing a long pipeline of potential listings. I saw the chief executive of JSE Limited, Leila Faree, last night boldly tweeting about how undervalued the local exchange was. And that did elicit, as you would expect, a predictable for and against commentary. Well, Valdeen Reddy joins us, Director of Capital Markets at JSE Limited, the company that runs the market. And Valdeen, I mean, you have to concur, I think, that the JSE is losing more listings than it is gaining. That is a correct assumption, isn't it?
Good evening, Bruce. Thanks for having me on your show. Yes, the JSE has experienced a significant amount of delistings, definitely a stat that we sit upright for and are concerned about. But if you actually drill down into the makeup of the nature of the exchange and in some areas where the delistings come in from, there's a varying amount of reason, and you've highlighted some of them. Some of them pose good opportunity for value and takeout either by private equity or by other companies doing M&A. And then also a lot of the delistings have come in from the small cap and fledgling space, where it is really hard to divorce a macro economic environment from the market. And you are seeing some of those companies struggle to maintain momentum and as a result have delisted for various reasons. So I think it's really important to drill down into the listing landscape and just, try and break this up in terms of what are the South African conditions, what are the value adds and the opportunities that we face, and then what the makeup looks like rather than the finite number of actual listing versus delisting steps.
But you must be worried that the JSE is losing relevance, though, as a place where, as a place of first choice, where people will come to raise capital. That surely should be a big concern for you.
Absolutely. I think the point that you make here is that there's varying competing alternative capital raise options at the moment. And you see it in product formation. So the U.S. markets have had a really buoyant period, really driven by listings in the diversity of the companies coming to market. You've seen a massive foray in the tech and health stocks. And this year, specifically, the SPACs have had a massive buoyancy. We've also seen a massive shift from public to private markets. And so, absolutely, I think the shift of capital formation is concerning. But what it shows you is that markets are evolving to form different forms of capital raise. Even at the moment, debt has been a cheaper option than some of the equity capital listings. It does give us the opportunity, though, to look and make sure that we have a diversified offering. While we haven't got so many new IPOs this year, we're sitting at 6 new listings and probably 14 delistings. We have seen uptake in different segments of our market. We launched the sustainability segment and have seen a pretty healthy and decent uptake with some social and sustainability bonds listed. We've had massive take up in the number of ETFs that have come to market, very varied and diversified, offering local and offshore as well as ESG-focused exposure. And then just on the equities market, you know, while the outlook has looked quite bleak and it's taken a while for market companies to come to market and the pipeline, like you say, looks concerning. We've also looked at, you know, what does it look like for the future? Are there opportunities? We have a lot of products ourselves on the exchange. From a products perspective, we feel we have a world-class product. It's now really about seeing the environment come to fore. To that point that I made about private markets, even the JSE has acknowledged this and are looking to go into the private markets, especially in post-COVID, where we've identified SME and infrastructure as two big pillars to the economic recovery. We are looking to go into the private markets to help capital raise outside of the public market space. Mm.
I mean, what you can't thrive in a dysfunctional environment. And for the last decade, South Africa has been deeply dysfunctional. The strikes and the riots of last week have cut short the great recovery that was really building in the South African economy, certainly disrupting it at very least, as the Reserve Bank governor was saying yesterday. You make up less than 1% of global GDP, probably 0.5% of global GDP. And as a result of that, I mean, just how can the JSE thrive in an environment like South Africa?
Absolutely. You can't divorce ourselves from the very real macroeconomic challenges our country's facing. I mean, they've been really front and center in the past 5 years and exacerbated in the COVID period and then more so last week. So you're absolutely right. It's really difficult in this environment. That's said, our capital markets have held up pretty strong. And while we've had a significant number of delistings, from a market cap perspective, our capital markets hold quite strong relative to even GDP. So if you actually look, our 2020 market cap is up 20%. And the secondary capital raise actually went up 80%, even in a tough economic environment. This year alone, our market cap is up almost 8%. Even though we've had 14 delistings, that cumulative value has been quite minute relative to the market cap. So I have to say, even though we're in tough economic challenges in our macro, there's a long lead time to prove South Africa's turnaround. I do think that we have some resilience in how our markets have fared. That would be naive to think that will be all that will get us through. I mean, there's a lot of work that has to be done to instill investor confidence, to really pick up the relevance of South Africa. Remember, while we have our own woes to address, other markets are also muscling up. And we saw that last year when we had in 2019, when China, Argentina, and Saudi Arabia came into emerging market indices. So it's not only our internal issues that we have to deal with, it's also the global macro landscape that against us that we have to fight against. But I think you're right, the environment looks difficult, but that said, and the tweet that Leila had put out about the value that South Africa holds, you can see it even now with some of the internationals coming in, trying to take up some of our local counties. There is a lot of value that we can unlock, but it will come with a concerted, deliberate effort from all fronts.
Somebody posted a really unkind description of the JSE on social media this evening. It's a pictorial form. And it shows a mother, I'm assuming it's a mother, a woman rather, a little girl, a little boy swimming. The woman is touted as an institutional investor. She's supporting the little girl who represents the JSE Top 40. The little boy looks like he's drowning. He's a mid-cap share. And at the bottom, underneath the water, is a skeleton chained to a chair. And that is the small caps on the JSE. There's no doubting that there are lots of globally competitive and some phenomenal global companies on the JSE. The five biggest firms make up most of the value of the shares on the JSE. And that is the lion's share is Naspers. Very little of what is happening on the JSE has got anything to do with South Africa. And that's the point. This market doesn't represent South Africa. It doesn't represent the reality of South Africa. And until we start getting some meaningful economic growth and we start seeing some meaningful profitability of those small and mid-cap shares on the JSE, I wonder just whether or not you're going to see continual flows of capital into global investment opportunities away from the JSE, Valdeen.
Yeah, I haven't seen the picture, but you've done a good job in describing it. So I think I can understand what it relates to. And that really has been a problem of our market. As you highlighted, loss of concentration. Concentration comes in many forms. And we have a strong top 40. Lots of them are global companies with earnings and revenue line items coming from offshore. And then you've got a whole host of companies, especially in the small and mid-cap space, where the trade activity is a lot more muted. Now, it comes to this point that we say about how do we unlock the value? How do we get more liquidity? So I think that, to figure out this, not only in South Africa, globally, there's been an externalization of cash and lots of people are looking for offshore investments. So really, I think the challenge is how do we showcase and stimulate growth across the board, across the segment? Now, this has been done in various ways and forms. You often look and see in the Australian market, they had tax incentive for superannuation where they have basically a healthy mix and trade activity of not only clients, but also in terms of the breadth of stocks that are traded and invested. I think the bottom line is we need to offer as an exchange diversity of product, and I think we definitely have that. What we do need is to have a better balance and mix of client activity, and that is happening. It is progressing. We've seen the retail clients surge in global markets. South Africa is a little bit of a lag effect, but we will catch up. So we saw the same when we had passive flows about 3 years ago dominating and lots of shift from active to passive. We're seeing that now with the massive and exorbitant take-ups in the ETF market. So I think we've got a structural shift to get through, but what we need is helping with openness of product and diversity of product to really have a good, compelling offering in South Africa. People will be hungry for a diversified portfolio, and for the JSE, it's really important that we have a blend and a mix of products and options so people can trade if they have a global view, if they have a local view, and really be incentivized to trade across the breadth of our stock.
Valdeen, thank you. Valdeen Reddy is Director of Capital Markets at JSE Group. She's a passionate proponent of the JSE. Lots of concern there. Lots of concern about the fact that it just isn't a great place to go to raise capital, and there's just not too much of that sort of activity happening on the market. Well, South Africa is a place of wondrous opportunity. It really is. And that wondrous opportunity comes in weird and wonderful ways. You can build businesses out of almost anything, particularly when it comes to something like redflagit.com. Redflagit.com is founded and run by Cobus van Staden. He is the chief executive, creator, and founder. And there's a business in tracking and identifying stolen goods, Cobus. Cobus van Staden, welcome to the Money Show this evening. Tell me how you operate.
Thank you, Bruce. Thank you for having me. Yeah, so basically, this website, especially with all the looting that's happened in our country, you can now go and register as a shop owner, or even as the police themselves, when they found the items, they can go list these items on the site as found, under the section found. The shop owners can now go list their stolen goods under the item stolen goods as the items that's been via using either the serial number of the item or the EMI code of a computer and so forth. But this actually runs across the board. You can even register stolen cars or stolen factory equipment and so forth. So this puts a means to an end to actually stop crime on a global scale.
Okay, so tell me, Kobus, I mean, what happens to the goods that are identified as stolen? I happen to have, I don't know, bought something or something I suspect is stolen, and what happens to those goods? Do they ultimately get seized by the police and destroyed?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I think the police has a police auction at the end of the day. And, you know, those items actually goes to waste. So this site, it's actually a very easy-to-use site, is designed in such a way that should you even come across an item that does not belong to you, you can register it as found. So it gives you three options. You've got the stolen option, the found option, and the missing option. So basically, as the shop owners now, I mean, with all this looting, all those items are out there in the market. So all those shop owners should actually go and list all those items. So should the police come across those items, they can now go and list those items as found and have them returned to the shop owners, or even you as a private individual as well. If you misplaced something and somebody came across the item, they can go and link that item onto the website, and you as the rightful owner can get your goods back.
Thank you, Kobus van Staden, creator and owner of redflagit.com.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Welcome to Tato Mashiko, the portfolio manager at Sundown Private Wealth. If you and I had taken a bet on Monday, would your bet have said the JSE will be at 68,000 on Friday? I don't think it would have, Tato. Monday was a scary day around the world, not just South Africa. I don't know if anybody bet that the markets would bounce back nearly as strongly as they have.
Evening, Bruce. I would not have taken a bet with you on Monday, no matter what the odds were. I think everyone can say that we're all quite surprised that we're up 2% for the week, given not only what was happening with the world and fears around the Delta variant and markets, but also what happened last week with the social unrest locally. So markets can be quite strange in some ways, and we are happy that we have ended the week on a positive note.
We'll take it, and we'll take every single penny that's been made this week, but nothing has changed since Monday's panic. Has it? I mean, the panic on Monday was fueled by, you know, COVID-19 is really scary, the Delta variant is really scary, and it's spreading quickly, and that's really frightening. So we can't see the future of growth, so let's get out. And then on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and today on Friday, we went, so what? Does it really matter? We know this. Why are we panicking? And everybody's put their foot on the gas again.
Well, that's one of the strange things with markets. On any given day, people may focus on one thing and put less emphasis on another. And you're 100% right. Nothing has been resolved as far as the Delta variant is concerned. Yet we have seen positive momentum from various equity markets. And, of course, Treasuries have improved to about 1.3% on the 10-year yield. Yet the concerns are still out there. And next week we may see people coming back with more concerns and more risk or sentiment. It really is just sentiment and psychology in the moment. And once people start seeing cases starting to creep up, we're likely to see even more selling. So the one thing we can probably be assured of is that there will be more volatility going forward. But whether it's up or down is anyone's guess at this point.
I tell you, it will be up and it will be down, just not necessarily in that order and possibly all at the same time. Sipho Maseko, he has been a very successful leader of Telkom for nearly a decade now. He's announced that he's going to be packing his bags at Telkom, and every CEO who, when they announce their retirement, their resignation, their departure, wants to see the share price fall. They do want to see the share price fall because it implies that they'll be missed and they've done a good job. And I think that's what the market told Sipho Maseko today. They said, cheers, dude, we're going to miss you.
Indeed. Mr. Maseko has been an excellent steward of Telkom over the 8 or 9 years that he's been in charge of the business. And if you recall, when he took over, Telkom was largely viewed as uninvestable by institutional investors, and there has been a strong turnaround in the business. They're far more focused on mobile and less focused on the slowing or the declining fixed line business. And the share price did fall 2.5% today. So I suppose that may be somewhat of an indication, but probably even more of an indication will be how the share price has performed over his tenure, and that has been positive. He has added value for shareholders, and one can only hope that Telkom appoints someone going forward who will be able to continue the good work that he has done.
And more important than the job that he did at Telkom by going to the office and strategizing and getting 14 million mobile customers onto the network and many other things, he proved something else, and that was that you could take government assets, you could partially privatize them, you could list them on a stock exchange, and provided you put the right people in charge, you could extract value from those assets. Somebody posted the other day that, you know, the posts and telecommunications were split in 1994, and the post office was kept 100% government, and Telkom was partially privatized, and one is, you know, dysfunctional and practically bankrupt, and the other one is a listed entity on the JSE which pays a dividend to government.
Indeed, and if you recall, Vodacom itself was owned by Telkom at one stage.
True.
It was unbundled. And I think you're spot on when you say that government-owned assets with partial privatization or with private operators who are incentivized to run the business can be a very workable model. And we've seen it in many countries across the world, whether it's in France or whether it's in China, with various state-owned enterprises on the Chinese side, or with the so-called golden share structure on the French side, where the companies are largely owned by private individuals, but government does have a blocking vote, so to speak. And so you have a sort of mutual agreement between shareholders who obviously want to maximize value, as well as government who has certain larger socioeconomic objectives. And so it can be well done if it is structured correctly. And hopefully we'll see more of that going forward from various SOEs.
Tato Mashiho, thank you. Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth.
On The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield, brought to you by Absa Trade Management Online. Transact securely online with Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. That's Africanacity. That's Absa. Absa is a registered FSP.
How to make perfume? We're going to do that in a couple of minutes' time. We'll play the Brutal Biz Quiz before Eyewitness News at 7 and bring you some of the best bits of The Money Show from the week coming up between 7 and 8. On the next Money Show, the chief executives of Liberty 2 Degrees and Anglo Platinum taking us through their results. Zozibinzi Tunzi, the Miss Universe South Africa contestant and winner, of course, is on Other People's Money. And a fabulous book on early childhood development by a legend in that sector. Her name is Jane Evans. She is from Ntata Ise Network Support Program on the next Money Show.
The Money Show.
The Friday File.
The Friday File.
Money Show brought to you by Absa Trade Management Online. Now's the time to speak to them for all your import and export finance needs. That's Africanacity. That's Absa. Absa is a registered FSP. Well, Marie Aoun is the founder and director at Santitichi. Marie, I've got that wrong. I've got your surname wrong, I'm sure. I've got your company name wrong, and you can correct me now. And luckily, you're far enough away not to harm me, which is good. So correct me now, please.
It's Aoun and Sandisi.
Sandisi, I got Sandisi, and Aoun is close enough. Marie, welcome to The Money Show. Smells can really transport you, can't they?
Thank
I mean,
the
scent of something, the smell of something. I've got a particular memory, two particular memories about smells taking me to places, and one is Cobra floor polish. I know this isn't very sophisticated. on a warm concrete floor. And when I smelled that, in one particular moment, it took me to outside Mrs. Walter's door at my primary school boarding school on a winter's afternoon. It was just that smell transported me there. And if I smell a diesel engine on a cold Joburg winter's morning, I feel like it is harvest time in the Free State from my childhood. I mean, smells are incredibly powerful things. You fortunately deal with things that are better than Cobra floor polish and diesel. But you do go for natural scents, don't you?
I hope so, yes. They are incredibly transportative, and I actually feel very privileged to be able to sort of talk to that part of people that is so, yeah, that is so deep in a sense. Yeah.
What is it about smell? What is the science of smell that makes it so powerful?
Well, the thing is, it's we need to smell. We actually need it for our survival. We obviously needed it a lot more way back when. But what it does is it goes directly to the amygdala, which is a very ancient part of our brain. And that sends, that's where sort of our emotions lie. It's where our memories lie. It's a very it sort of bypasses reason, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
It needs to immediately communicate to you on a very visceral level. And that's why scent is just such a powerful mechanism.
What got you into blending scents? I mean, you worked in fashion before switching. What was the catalyst for it?
I wanted to do gardening.
Okay, that's obvious.
And somehow, I sort of wanted to pack it all in and go and do landscape design. And then I thought, you know what, let me just upskill myself. So I did an MCOM. And in that process, while I was doing my MCOM, I read up about natural perfumes. And I can't really explain. It's just like something just clicked for me. I was like, this is perfect. It's kind of a combination of the two worlds, if you will, of the fashion and the garden.
Do you extract your own scents? I mean, I've been to Grasse. I've been very lucky to go to Grasse near Nice, which is the epicenter of the distillation of scents from the beautiful flowers and the herbs and things that exist in that part of the world. And it's a huge process. I mean, do you do your own distillations or do you buy in your natural scents?
I do not do my own distillations. It's just you need... I mean, I can't do that from my garden. I would need a lot more space. I'm also not an expert in it. And like you said, it's quite technical. Some of my ingredients could be easily grown, but some are more specialized and only grown in certain regions and in certain countries. So yeah, that would be lovely, but it's actually impossible, I think.
There are two series on Netflix which I've watched recently. One is Halston. Have you seen Halston? He's a guy who's big into fashion and goes into fragrances. And he was well known in the 60s for his fashion and the 70s for his perfumes. Yes. You know Halston? Have you seen it?
I know who Halston is, but I haven't seen the series.
Okay, because there's this one marvelous scene where this parfumier, this person who does what you do, challenges Halston to bring his favorite scents in. And she tests him with woods and, you know, all sorts of things, all the sandalwoods and all the regular stuff. And he brings in a plastic bag with one of the items is his lover's used jockstrap. And you wonder how she's going to respond. You wonder how she's going to respond to this thing. And she takes this jockstrap and she shoves it into her face like a teenager would shove a donut into their face. And she just breathes so deeply into this fabric. And she really takes in. I mean, she's got an acute sense of smell, I'm sure. And it can't be pleasant, but she does this. She sucks the smell in. And she goes, you've got something there. And so much of the natural scent, I think, that people like you do is based on our odors, the things we give off, the pheromones that we don't like, you know, we disguise with deodorants and things. But I mean, it's and we wash off with soaps. But so much of what you do is that basic, isn't it? It goes into that very intuitive instinct of ours.
Yeah, no, it does. Absolutely. I mean, the thing with natural perfumes is, it actually blends a lot more with your personal scent. So rather than just overlaying and masking your own scent, because we all have our own scent, and that's actually often really quite beautiful and that's something to celebrate. So natural perfume actually works with that. So much more than synthetics. If you try on a natural perfume and someone else in your studio tries on the same natural perfume, it will smell so different on their skins. And that's something special about natural perfumes that actually works with your own chemistry.
But I'm assuming you don't do extractive sweaty jockstrap. Yours has more lavenders and flowers and things like that. You have standards. They're not limits. They're standards. That's what they are.
I work with natural, with botanical animalic scents. So, for example, buchu is incredibly animalic. It smells a bit of pee and it smells a little bit of sweat. And it's very, you always have to have that animalic aspect in a perfume. But I don't work with civet or musk or things like that. The only animal scent I work with is a beeswax absolute. It's a magnolia, one of our perfumes.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a beautiful, it's such an art and it's such a science. And are you moving a lot of perfume? I mean, how is your distribution going?
Yeah, so it's a super niche product that I'm making, and I have had to spend a lot of time educating the customer. That's a big part of what I do. I am moving, and things are definitely on the app for me, which is really exciting. I think I've spent I've been doing this for about 6 years, and I've spent a lot of that time refining the blends, updating the perfume packaging, so now it's all refillable. And the one area that I do feel I am sort of lacking in is sales and marketing, and I'm just not the kind of person that's very good at pushing that. I'm a perfectionist, so I tend to hold back. So that's the new frontier, is actually, you know, complementing the team in a sense to really get that going. If I tell you that all the people who stock me actually approached me first, you sort of get an idea that.
No, absolutely. But the point is, you've got clearly a product that is sought after. Now you need somebody to help you do a little push, just a nudge. I know it can be so uncomfortable, but boy, if you don't sell, you're going to go nowhere. And that will be such a pity. Marie, thank you for coming and sharing with us on the Friday File. I'm sure there are marketers who have strong olfactory senses who would love to come and get a better insight into your business and help you market it. I'm sure you will get a lead from this interview. Thank you so much for joining us, Marie. Marie Ayoun, who is the founder director at San DC. And it's just a lovely story of transformation. And like Helston, if you haven't seen Helston, I do recommend it. There's another one far more gory about perfume. It's in German with subtitles. It's called Perfume. But you do need a strong constitution to watch that one. That one is not very nice at all. It's more of a murder mystery than it is a story about glorious scents. But there's an element to that. Coming up in a moment, the Brutal Biz Quiz. I'd like you to play, please, this evening. It'd be great to have you play on 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702. Lebohang Morake. You know Lebohang. Lebo M. Is the composer of which Hollywood blockbuster? Give me the name of the blockbuster that Lebohang Morake is intimately involved with. Not just the movies, but the stage shows and so much more. That's coming up in a moment. Brutal Biz Quiz time. 021-446-0567. 011-883-0702.
Bruce Whitfield on 702. Call Bruce on 011-883-0702.
Brutal Biz Quiz time. Lebohang Morake, composer of which Hollywood blockbuster, Hosea?
Hi, Bruce.
Answer, please.
The Lion King.
Lion King, absolutely right. Lebo M to you and I, our guest on Other People's Money. He'll be on our Best Bits of the Money show between 7 and 8. New Shepard took which billionaire to the edge of space?
What's his name? George Bezos.
I'm sorry. It's lovely, Hosea, but I can't give it to you. George Bezos did not go to space, I'm afraid. No, not to the edge or anywhere else. New Shepard, Austin in Randburg. Took which billionaire, not which well-known South African lawyer, to the edge of space?
He took Jeff Bezos.
Jeff Bezos, not George Bezos. I feel terribly sorry for you, Hosea, but I'm afraid, yes, Jeff Bezos is the correct one. The billionaire made a short journey towards space, took his brother. He took the fabulous 82-year-old astronaut Wally Funk, who should have gone many, many years ago with him, and an 18-year-old, I was going to say brat, student. The Netherlands-born Pieter Boon is the chief executive of which JSE-listed company?
Oh,
he's quite
crikey.
He's quite new. He's been in the country for about 2 or 3 months, and he's had a hell of a job in the last week or two. And he sounds very chipper and optimistic, actually, although he's asked the president to lift the country's restrictions on alcohol, saying that it would be especially beneficial to those businesses severely impacted by the recent looting. Who is Pieter Boon? Which company does he run?
SAB?
No, it doesn't, I'm afraid. Martin in Roodepoort. Oh, fine. That's rude, Martin. Gordy in Dobsonville.
Hi, Bruce. Jeez, I'm sure I know this.
I'm sure you do as well, but until you say it, it doesn't count, unfortunately. I can read your mind. I can see it. It's in your mind, Gordy.
Let's have the question again.
Pieter Boon is chief executive of which company? Oh,
hello? Gordy,
I know you're trying to get it out, but you can't. Quickly, Nelson in Centurion.
Pick and Pay.
Pick and Pay. Absolutely right. Pieter Boon took over at Pick and Pay about 2 months ago. Who owns Africa's biggest second-hand car showroom?
We Buy Cars.
Nelson, you are the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz on this Friday night. Well done to you, We Buy Cars, this week announcing it's bought the Ticket Pro Dome in Northgate, and it's going to create one of the biggest second-hand car dealerships in the world. You'll be very sad that you can't go and watch concerts there anymore, but you can go buy a second-hand car. You'll be able to fit 1,500 cars under a single roof under that enormous dome. It's nothing short of extraordinary. It really is. But that is what it was built for all of those years ago. 25 years ago or thereabouts, it was built as a car showroom, never got off the ground. This time, the timing is right, and I'm sure it will flourish. Coming up after Eyewitness News, the best bits of The Money Show from the week that has been.